Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Standard of Review and Patent Fact-Finding Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 20, 2015, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Teva Pharmaceuticals USA v. Sandoz. This case concerned whether a district court's factual finding in support of its construction of a patent claim may be reviewed de novo, the standard applied by the Federal Circuit in this case, or must instead be reviewed only for clear error, in keeping with Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 52A. In an opinion delivered by Justice Breyer, the court held by a vote of 7-2 that when reviewing the district court's resolution of subsidiary factual matters made in the course of its construction of a patent claim, the Federal Circuit must apply a clear error, not a de novo standard of review. The judgment of the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit was vacated, and the case remanded for further proceedings. Justice Breyer's opinion was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion, which Justice Alito joined. To discuss the case, we have Professor Kristen Ozenga, who is a professor of law at the University of Richmond School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Ozenga.
I'm Kristen Ozenga from the University of Richmond School of Law, and I have previously provided a post-argument analysis of the Teva versus Sandoz case for the Federalist Society. And quite honestly, I'm happy to say that at that point, I was at least kind of mostly right when I predicted that the Supreme Court's decision in the case was likely to change patent law. And yes, that was probably the most hedged statement of my own correctness I have ever given, but in any case, on with what happened in the Supreme Court's decision. Prior to this case, it was the Court of Appeals for Federal Circuit's longstanding practice to review a district court judge's construction of patent claim terms de novo. This included not just the ultimate interpretation, but also any underlying factual decisions that helped get to the ultimate decision. To get right to the point, the Supreme Court last week in the Teva opinion stated that while the ultimate interpretation of claim terms remains a legal conclusion and subject to de novo review, the underlying factual findings are to be reviewed for clear error. That this is the way the Supreme Court came down is not a surprise. As I mentioned in the earlier teleforum, the question presented was, quote, whether a district court's factual finding in support of its construction of a patent claim term may be reviewed de novo, as the Federal Circuit requires, or only for clear error, as Rule 52A of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure require. It seemed fairly clear to me that the Supreme Court was not going to give the Federal Circuit a pass to trump the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. And the opinion, delivered by Justice Breyer, did not disappoint. In the first few paragraphs of the opinion, the court gets right to that point. Should the Federal Circuit's review of a district court's fact-finding in claim construction be de novo, or should it review the fact-finding as it would review a trial judge's fact-finding in any other case, be held as correct unless clearly erroneous? In holding that the appellate court must apply the clearly erroneous standard, the Supreme Court stated that fact-finding is fact-finding is fact-finding, even when it underlines interpretation of patent claim terms. There's nothing magical about the facts that allows them to be reviewed differently from other facts that underlie any other ultimate question of law. And the Federal Circuit is in no way special. To be fair, there are still some issues about patent claim construction that remain mysteries, such as whether patents are more like statutes or contracts. This has been an issue since the Supreme Court's Markman case in 1996. This is the case that delegated patent claim interpretation to the judge rather than a jury and characterized claim construction as a mongrel practice. And this question led to a divided Supreme Court in the Teva case, with the majority arguing that a patent is more like a contract, and a dissenting opinion written by Justice Thomas and joined by Justice Alito, arguing that a patent is instead more like a statute. The reason that this question is even relevant is that there is substantial precedent in contract law for separating the construction of the contract itself from subsidiary or underlying questions of fact that inform the construction. There's much less precedent in the statutory interpretation world for this distinction between fact and interpretation. As the dissent states, however, there is no exception to Rule 52 for patent law. Rather, the dissent's point is claim constriction simply does not implicate underlying questions of fact. Regardless of the perhaps academic debate of whether patents are more like contracts or statutes, the outcome of this case is common sense, given the reality of much of patent claim construction. As the majority opinion notes, patent law is a field where much depends on specific scientific problems and principles not contained in the general storehouse of knowledge and experience. To get that information, litigants and courts often depend on expert testimony, examination of the invention in question, or court-appointed experts. A trial judge who has seen these experts in person or watched a demonstration of the invention has had a greater opportunity to understand and gain familiarity with the issues than could possibly be garnered from reading a transcript. Furthermore, patent cases often involve a quote-unquote battle of the experts. The trial judge is in a much better position to best assess the expert's credibility, etc. Unlike many other recent Supreme Court cases, the court here provided some definitive guidance on how to apply its ruling. If the district court's claim construction relies only on intrinsic evidence, that is, the patent's claims, specification, and prosecution history, then de novo review by the Federal Circuit is proper. But evidence of background science or the meaning of a term for a relevant technological field during the relevant period of time, at least that's how the court worded it. More typically, we would think what meaning a foceta or person having ordinary skill in the art would have ascribed to the term. This type of evidence is generally introduced via testimony, either from the inventor or an expert, or perhaps from a treatise or other documentary evidence. These findings of the district court will be reviewed now by the Federal Circuit for clear error. One issue about patent claim construction that is often raised is that it is too uncertain. And one reason it was relegated to judges back during the Markman case in 1996 was to improve consistency and uniformity in strong patents. This concern was raised by the litigants, but the Supreme Court was unconcerned, since the Federal Circuit still has de novo review of the ultimate question on the meaning of any given claim term. So what are the implications of this decision for patent litigation? Well, it may have no impact at all. I suffer at least some level of cynicism with respect to the Federal Circuit's response to any Supreme Court correction of its jurisprudence, particularly if it removes some of the court's freedom and flexibility as this decision does. Quite honestly, the Federal Circuit could just reframe the issue to avoid the ruling altogether. Now, it may be a bit trickier in this situation, since the Supreme Court gave specific instructions that extrinsic evidence, that is the expert testimony, etc., should be reviewed for clear error. However, the Federal Circuit is going to have to determine how much of the submitted factual information is actually part of the underpinning used by the district court to arrive at the ultimate interpretation. On a less cynical and potentially more positive note, what this may lead to is parties introducing greater amounts of extrinsic evidence to try and make it more difficult for the Federal Circuit to overturn a favorable claim interpretation at the trial level. Of course, at the time that this evidence is being introduced, neither party knows if they're going to receive a favorable claim interpretation. However, greater amounts of extrinsic evidence may make it easier for them to keep that favorable claim interpretation on appeal. It may also lead district court judges to be more solicitous of extrinsic evidence in an attempt to avoid being reversed by the Federal Circuit on appeal. The concern about this is that, logically, and as well as according to Federal Circuit precedent, such as in the Phillips case or the Vitronics case, intrinsic evidence is supposed to be the best source of information for claim construction. That is where the district court judge is supposed to go first when interpreting claim terms and only resort to extrinsic evidence if the intrinsic evidence is ambiguous. This seems to set up an incentive, however, for the district court judge to look more favorably at extrinsic evidence rather than focusing purely on the intrinsic evidence. Other implications is that this could encourage earlier settlement in patent infringement cases if there is a sense that claim construction determinations are less likely to be overturned on appeal. It could also lead to less appeals altogether, because right now a number of appeals happen simply because it's a toss-up when you get to the Federal Circuit as to whether the district court's claim interpretation will stand. But at the end of the day, it's important to remember that the Federal Circuit still enjoys de novo review of the ultimate interpretation of any patent claim term. With respect to patent prosecution, this case presents a bit of a conundrum. If during patent prosecution, applicant submits factual information to obtain a favorable claim construction in order to get a patent issued, the data then becomes part of the intrinsic evidence. That if the district court relies on that during patent litigation, the Federal Circuit will get to review de novo. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out and whether or not it affects what sort of information applicants for patents submit during the prosecution process and how much they have to hold back with the hopes of submitting it during instead litigation to receive clear error review of parts of claim construction. So as I mentioned when I started the call, I was kind of, sort of, almost right about this case changing patent litigation. From now on, we'll just have to see how much it actually does change.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.